Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, Mike.
We're going to return to an old friend of ours, a topic we've talked about a lot. It's back pain. As every clinician knows, about 85% of us adults are going to have some back pain at some point in our life, and back pain symptoms are the principal reason for about 2% of office visits to primary care doctors here in the U.S., presumably other places as well. For the most part, back pain is self-limited. Those who continue to have back pain beyond, say, the acute period of 4 weeks, then we call it subacute back pain, and that lasts sort of 4 to 12 weeks, and then they can go on longer than 12 weeks, and we have a brand new label for it that we call a chronic back pain. Rarely, but sometimes back pain is a harbinger of some serious medical illnesses, and so we have to be careful that we don't miss those serious things, but that we don't overtreat and image, upside down and backwards. Most patients who present with back pain to primary care settings are going to have nonspecific back pain, and they're going to improve over a few to several weeks, usually with conservative self-care, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Less than 1% are going to have serious systemic etiologies like malignancy or infection. Usually a history and physical exam is sufficient to evaluate the vast majority of patients who present to our practice with pain of less than 4 weeks. Then as they go on, we might want to think about reevaluating them and imaging, etc. But even if the pain is not worrisome, and even if we agree that it's going to be self-limiting, it still hurts. So how are we going to treat the pain? You've got a poem that comes from the BMJ, published in 2014, volume 350. In the electronic version, it starts on page 1225. The clinical question is acetaminophen in the United States, or paracetamol outside of the United States, basically the same drug, is acetaminophen effective for the treatment of lower back pain or osteoarthritis? Mark, what did they find? It's a meta-analysis, right?
Yeah, it is. And just wanted to add, we just covered, I was teaching in a course up here in Northern Michigan with one of my colleagues, and one of the poems we covered had to do with, the red flags in terms of patients with back pain. And it was a good reminder. There are a couple of things that, and I have to say, I don't always remember to ask these when I have a new onset back pain person, particularly somebody middle-aged. Do they have a history of cancer? That's in the primary care setting, the positive predictive value was like 7%. In the ER setting, 30%. For that being the cause of their new back pain, if they have a cancer diagnosis in the last 5 years. Mm. The other one is long-term steroid use. And, somebody may have had history of steroid use, not be taking them now, or maybe the first time we're seeing them. So asking about that, that's an important factor. So just a couple things to keep in mind when you do see those new patients to ask about, to find those needles in a haystack. A lot of our job is needle finding, as I call it.
Yeah,
in
absolutely.
Primary care.
Good reminder. Thanks.
Anyway, yeah, this was they did a search. They searched 9 databases, including the Cochrane Registry. I couldn't name more than 4 databases, so I don't know what other 5 were. So they had a couple authors independently try to find all of these articles. They had people in tandem pull the articles, extract the data, evaluate the quality of studies. Overall, the studies were good quality. Overall, most of the studies, they found 13 studies, 13 randomized trials that were good quality. And of those, most actually used the full recommended dosage of 3,900 to 4,000 milligrams a day, which I think is really important. A lot of studies in the past and a lot of our patients don't use that full recommended dose. They didn't find any evidence of publication bias, meaning that negative trials didn't go unpublished. There was no evidence of that. So for patients with low back pain, they found high quality research, more than 1,000 patients, and they found a lack of effect on pain or disability in either the immediate or short-term follow-up periods. For hip or knee osteoarthritis, they found a statistically significant but clinically not very important effect on pain and disability. They were Results generally were homogeneous except for disability in the immediate term, where there were some different findings between studies, but that's an outcome where it's harder to standardize and there may be some cultural and financial and other social issues involved in that. Adverse effects were minimal, which is good. Patients getting the acetaminophen were more likely to have a higher liver function results, 1.5 times upper limit of normal, than those getting placebo, but it wasn't a large number and there weren't any. With 1,000 people, you're not really going to find the major complications. They're really disappointing, frankly, because it would be nice if they had found that it was just wonderfully effective for, you know, low back pain and knee pain. But I think our patients have been telling us for a while that, you know, I've tried the Tylenol. It didn't really help a whole lot. Certainly, if a patient is using it, likes it, it seems to be safe. There are some benefits, particularly in knee and hip osteoarthritis, but don't appear to be significant benefits for back pain.
I'm always a little hesitant to push the upper limit, the 4,000 milligrams a day. The therapeutic to toxic ratio is very small when you get up at that level, and I'm always afraid. So I try to keep patients more in the 3,000 milligram dose a day. Is there evidence for that? I mean, I've certainly seen patients, you know, maybe they're taking more and they're not telling me, but I've had some patients have had serious liver problems. One woman particularly ended up needing a liver transplant from taking, you know, these kinds of drugs, paracetamol. For her, it was acetaminophen, for months and months.
You know, I think that in general, and our friend and colleague Jerry Hoffman, professor at UCLA, likes to talk about this and is a big advocate of acetaminophen safety and that the harms are greatly overstated. My understanding is that, you know, you get into trouble when you have multiple drugs and people don't realize that they're taking more than 3 or 4,000 milligrams a day of Tylenol because they're getting it in a variety of medications. And the other is, you know, use of other medications or alcohol that can also damage the liver. So that's my understanding. I think if someone is just taking 4,000 milligrams. Now, you know, a tiny older patient, probably wouldn't be a good idea to put them on 4,000. I think for a typical adult, you know, 50-year-old adult, average size coming in, I'm pretty comfortable with the 4,000. I do say, you know, avoid, you know, alcohol use. If they are drinking, if they say, well, I do drink a few beers, then I'm less inclined to put them on this.
Yeah, good point. And your point is also well taken. A lot of these drugs, the Tylenol PM or whatever that somebody takes, they may not realize that that's, even though it does say Tylenol PM.
Yeah, I know.
You know, anyways. Okay, good points. Thanks so much, Mark. We'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds great.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.